When I came to faith in Jesus, when I first came to Him and got to know Him, we developed a relationship that, as far as I could tell, was as close as a relationship could get. But then I did something that distorted that relationship, put some distance in it, some awkwardness. And it felt a lot as though I had ruined it. When I understood the damage of what I'd done, I tried to fix it. But that didn't work. I tried various things and discovered that I could not repair the damage that I'd done. But one day, Jesus fixed it. It was perhaps the most humiliating day of my life, but it was also, because of the repair, the best day of my life in a way. I don't like talking about embarrassing things, but I thought if you'd let me do it, I could share a little bit of what happened and how that worked, and maybe some of you could benefit from that. I don't know if that sort of thing happened to me. Perhaps I'm not the only one. When Jesus came back to visit us after the resurrection, for the first time, we were locked in a room, cowering in fear. We were huddled in there. Every noise outside the door threatened us, because we thought the Romans were going to pound their way through the door at any second and arrest us and drag us off, crucify us. And so we were whispering, grown men in there, whispering together. I don't know what good that did. But then all of a sudden somebody in a loud voice said, "Peace be with you." And we jumped out of our skin, looked around, and there He was. Jesus was right there with us. And of course we reacted at first with fright, pulled back in fear. I thought my heart was going to just fly out of my chest. But gradually we settled down. He showed us the wounds on His hands, and He said it again, "Peace be with you." And eventually our fear changed to excitement and then joy. And all of the disciples began to crowd around Him and talk to Him and ask questions. And it was just, you know, some of them it looked like they were about ready to start jumping up and down. They couldn't contain their excitement. But me, I found myself in the back of the group, holding back. Because in truth, I didn't really feel like I had any right to be a disciple anymore. I couldn't look Him in the eye. I felt an awkwardness between us, a distance. Because, you see, I had denied Him. I said I didn't know Him. And what made that especially anguishing for me was the fact that I had promised I would never do that. Out loud. I swore to Him I would never, ever do that. And it wasn't very much that caused me to turn and do what I swore I'd never do. A servant girl. But you're one of them, aren't you? But I really don't know how this happened. I think maybe as a young child, maybe I witnessed a crucifixion that horrified me or something. I don't know, but whenever I think about crucifixion, there is this irrational terror that fills my heart. And when I began to see what was about to happen to Jesus, I became so scared. I'm not proud of this. She said, "You're one of them." I said, "No, I'm not. I don't even know who He is." Now, I denied Him the first time. Easier the second. It's almost automatic the third time. And after the third time, He looked me straight in the face. I was crushed. And so when He came back, there was that between us. There was this shame in my heart, this disappointment with myself. this failure. And I just could not get up close. Couldn't even look him in the eye. But it happened a couple more times. And then he sent us down to Galilee, and I decided on the way down, I had a lot of time to think about it. I said, I'm going to have to fix this. This just feels too bad. And so I resolved that the next time I saw him, no matter what was going on, I would greet him in the most enthusiastic way I possibly could to get as close to him as I possibly could. And I got my chance. It was after we had been fishing one night. We'd been out all night, and in the early morning, he was standing on the shore, but we didn't realize who it was until he told us to cast our net on the other side of the boat. We hadn't caught anything all night. And when he said, cast your net on the other side, on the right side, it kind of triggered a memory, because Jesus had done that once before, and as we were throwing the net, I know we were all asking, could this be Jesus again? And as soon as we tried to pull in the net, we realized it was filled with so many fish, couldn't be pulled in. John looks at me and said, it's the Lord! And I knew this was my chance. It was now or never. So I grabbed my clothes that I had laid on the bench in the boat, and I wrapped them around me. It wasn't very far into the shore, and I jumped in the water, and I waded and swam and got there as fast as I could. The other disciples were rowing their way in, and as I came up out of the water, I put out my hands to Jesus, and I, in my most enthusiastic voice that I could muster, I said, Lord Jesus, it's so good to see you again. But the other disciples were coming in about that same time, and where Jesus was cordial, he greeted us as a group. And I shrunk back a little bit in my heart. And I thought, he's not going to get over this. And he said, why don't you bring some of those fish and we'll have some breakfast together. He had a fire going, and the other disciples paid no attention to that. They just wanted to crowd around Jesus, get as close as they could. And I thought, well, here's my chance. I'll obey what he said to do. And I went over, and I single-handedly tried to pull that net of fish up on the shore where we could get some of them, take them for breakfast. And that thing was heavy. And I pulled as hard as I could, and I eventually got the net up on shore, and I'm looking out of the corner of my eye to see if he was watching. If maybe if I worked hard enough for him, maybe that would take care of it, and we could start off on a fresh start. And I brought some of the best fish over, and he thanked me. But again, I just felt that same shame in my heart, that same awkwardness, the same distance. But after breakfast, he called to me by name. After breakfast, he said, Simon, come here. And I went over to him. And the closer I got, I think the lower my head hung. And I could tell that the other apostles were curious as to what was about to happen. And they kind of came over too and clustered around us a little bit. And I kind of stood there not knowing what he was going to say. Shame to my very bones. And he said, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And I looked up to see what he meant, and he was pointing at the other disciples. And I glanced over at their faces, and they were real curious to see how I was going to answer that question, because the time was, before the crucifixion, that I would have boldly said, yes, I love you lots more than any of these guys. Nobody could love you as much as I do. Because I was good at making bold and brash promises and boasts. That's just kind of the way I was put together. I tried to elbow my way into the front of that group and to be the head or the leader, the most important in that group. And I thought I could do it by making bold promises. And I had essentially said that I was more faithful, more loyal than any of the rest just before he died. But as I looked at those guys' faces, I recognized that in their own individual ways, each of them had demonstrated their loyalty, their bravery, and their love for Jesus every bit as much, if not more, probably more than I had. Thomas, he was the first one to say, "Let's go to Jerusalem and die with him." And he had never denied Jesus. As a matter of fact, when we were trying to convince Thomas that Jesus was alive again, that he'd been resurrected, Thomas was having nothing to do with that unless he had proof, because he loved Jesus that much. And Matthew, he risked it all. I mean, he'd already turned his back on the support system of the community. He had already turned his back on his people, his family, his friends, and he'd been collecting taxes for the Romans. He'd traded friendship and family and heritage and religion for money. But when Jesus said, "Follow me," he turned his back on that too. He's completely vulnerable. I don't think I've ever seen such a courageous act of faith as Matthew. When he turned it all away, he left it all behind and he followed Jesus. There was no way that I could say that I loved Jesus more than any of those guys. No way. So instead of saying that, kind of sheepishly, kind of ashamed, I said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." But I couldn't say more. And he thought about it for a while. It was quiet. And I was in agony, just waiting to see what he was going to say. And finally, when it became unbearable, he said, "Feed my lambs." And I was startled by that. He seemed to always be saying things that you couldn't understand unless you really worked at it to try to understand it. And this was one of those. And I was about to ask him a question about it, but he cut me off and he asked me a question instead. He asked me the same question again. He said, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" And when he said it again, my heart felt like it was going to break. It hurt so badly. I had just told him that I was going to love him, that I did love him. Why did he have to ask me again? And I began to realize that what Jesus was implying by asking me again was that he was not going to trust my promises, that my words were not enough for the relationship that he wanted to have with me. He wanted more than that. And I'm thinking, man, how can I show him? I know he knows I love him. I know he knows what's going on inside my heart. Because Jesus had that capacity. He showed that time and time again. He'd get into an argument with somebody and he would just completely devastate the other man in the argument because he knew the motives in the man's heart. He knew everybody's heart. Jesus had the capacity to connect with a heart that had been so hardened by sin that everybody in the community had turned their back on that person, and the person herself or himself had long since given up on his own heart. It's too painful to look in there to see what was there. But Jesus could see the last smoldering ember of humanity in there, and he could reach in and connect with it because he knew everybody's heart. And I knew he knew my heart. How could I show him that I loved him? And I'm wrestling with all of these things, and he says, "Be a shepherd. Take care of my flock." And I began to get it. Jesus wanted more than my promises. Didn't just simply want words in our relationship. He wanted my heart too. He wanted me to demonstrate my love for him by taking care of those that followed him. Not as a high position of prestige and honor and special privileges, but taking the lowest place, the demeaning hard work of a shepherd, like he had done for us. Jesus said he was the good shepherd. And time after time, he would show us how tirelessly he would take care of our needs. He would lead us to where we needed to go. He would provide for our hunger and provide for our questions. He would bind up our wounds. And he promised he'd lay down his life to protect us. And he did. And now he was saying to me, be a shepherd. Take the last place. Take the lowest, hardest, most demeaning place and watch out for my flock. Show me you love me. And I remembered it kind of connect for me. He said, I give you a new command that you love one another the same way I loved you. I don't know if I should tell you this or not. I was about to open my mouth and make another promise. I was about to say, yeah, I'll do that, Lord. I'm your man. But he cut me off again. He didn't let me do that. He asked me a question. The same question. He says, Son of John, do you truly love me? The ache in my heart turned to tears inside. I was so sad, so ashamed. But then I realized it kind of felt like he was looking into my heart, and more, he was reaching into my heart and loosening up that shame. I don't know how to explain this. But my heart was physically hurting, as though Jesus had his hands in there and was tugging at that shame that he might take it to himself. Take it away from me. And when I answered him a third time, you know everything, Lord. You know I love you. I felt this amazing release. And I knew he did take my shame. And the tears inside became tears outside. And I fell apart. I began to sob uncontrollably as this freedom began to course through my body. And my heart and my soul began to feel released at last as he took the shame. And I realized that he owned it. He died for it. The other disciples were pretty embarrassed. They'd never seen anything like this from Peter. I didn't care. And again, Jesus stayed silent. He was waiting for me to be able to look him in the face. And I still didn't want to do it, but I knew I had to. So as I began to settle down from the uncontrollable sobbing, I looked up. I was afraid that I would see an expression of great disappointment and judgment. But when I actually looked him in the eye, I saw understanding and compassion and love. And I recognized that Jesus loved me not because I was so great, not because I made great promises, not because I could keep the promises I made. I couldn't. You know why he loved me? Because he loved me. Failures and all. He wanted more than my promises. He wanted my heart that would express itself in acts of love, taking the lowest place of service, being humble. And more than that, he wanted my life unconditionally. He said to me, feed my lambs. But when you were little, You used to dress yourself and go where you wanted, but one day somebody else is going to get you dressed for something. Stretch out your arms. And he went like that. And as the sleeves fell back on his arms, I could see the wounds still on his hands. And I knew what he was saying to me was, Simon, you're going to be crucified one day. And when he said that, when he did that, once again my heart was gripped by that irrational fear, the same fear that made me deny him before. I was overwhelmed with terror. I can't explain that to you. I just was. But then he said, follow me. The same two words he'd called me with. Around the same lake. Years before, he'd said, follow me. And when he said that, the terror started to dissipate. And I realized that what he was saying was, if I follow him, no matter what life brings, even my most profound and irrational terror, even if he intends for me to face that truly, he will go through it with me. It will never be alone. Yeah, he wants my promises, wants me to own up to who he is, to acknowledge him before men. But more than that, he wants my heart. Not just theoretically, but lived out in practical acts of love in a humble way, taking the lowest place. And he wants my life unconditionally, step by step, following along behind him. I'm not to worry about what tomorrow's going to bring, not to worry about what the other disciples may have in their life, just follow. And when he went through that process with me, it repaired the relationship. And I thought, as embarrassing as it is, maybe if I could share it with other folks like yourselves, I don't know, maybe you feel the same way I felt from time to time. If Jesus walked through that door, would you run to him? Or do you see something in your heart that would cause you to hold back? Something that only he can heal. Have you given him lip service? I follow Jesus out loud. It's a real relationship. The one that he wants has no distance between it, no pretenses, no masks. It's not a matter of what we say. It's a matter of living out our love for him through humble, loving service to one another and following along behind him step by step. Our words, our heart, our life. I just wanted to share that with you and give you a chance to think it over.